This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said.
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck, wasn't that his
name? Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richter. You talk dirty to me.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero. Coming to you live here on this Wednesday evening. We have a big night ahead because we're wrapping up the year that was 2002 in World Wrestling Entertainment. And we have our very special guest, as we always do at the end of these half year and year reviews. Scott Criscola, can you believe we're here? Because I feel like we finished 2002 like 3 months ago.
I feel like we finished 2002 in 2002.
I know, right?
So. JR, always a pleasure. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 324 of the Place to Be podcast. And yeah, it does seem like it. And I feel like the 03 Rumble is it's like right at our grasp, but not quite there. So
almost there.
So almost there. But we are awaiting our usual wonderful guest to take us through those last 6 months. We had a lot of questions. This might be the juiciest of our sessions with him. Because yes. a lot of stuff went on behind the scenes in those, you know, July to December of 2002.
Also, SAGs, it's our next to last one. We're going to have him for the very early part of 03, and then he's gone. Get his ass canned, and we're out of luck. So.
We're SOL. And we're the ones that pay the price for it. So.
All right, let's talk quick about PlayStation.com, then we'll bring Kevin in. A really cool piece I'm going to tout because I did it, and I liked it. New addition to my treasure trove, Scott. I looked at Bret Hart versus Bob Backlund from July 30th, 1994, 20 years ago today. It is a match where Bob Backlund snapped and officially turned heel and the birth of the Mr. Backlund character. So I watched that match. I gave a review and kind of threw the context around it as well. Also, day three of the knockout round of the World Cup of TV characters is up. So we're 3 days into the knockout brackets of 128. And we're chugging along. Four matchups go each day, so be sure to check those out. That means there's 12 up right now. Get in there, vote, and come back each and every day to keep the tournament chugging along. We've had great participation so far. We look forward to more of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Glenn Butler walked us around the web, as usual, had some interesting stories. We had the Bauer Show talking about Johnny Manziel. And Scott, we kicked off Seinfeld, the PTBN series rewatch.
Yes.
That is me, Aaron George, Andrew Flanagan, Jordan Duncan. We are going through every episode of the great series Seinfeld. We have different categories, best character, best storyline. We're marking kind of monumental moments and debuts and quotes and everything else through the, and we're going to grade every episode. So if you're a Seinfeld fanatic or you're just getting into the series, check these out. Episode one is up right now, the Seinfeld Chronicles. Episode two should be up by the end of the week as well. We're going to aim for one or two a week with this. So we'll keep it as a pretty regular series, but be sure to keep coming back each and every week to get more and more Seinfeld. And there's other Seinfeld stuff coming as well in the next couple of weeks. So, Russell Sellers had his new hotness, his top comics picks for the weeks of July 30th, this week here. Dan McGinn recapped a very interesting episode of Raw. as we head into SummerSlam season, of course, the main event has been set, and Dan took over the reins from you, Scott, as you move on to some other projects.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing a fine job so far.
Yes,
of course, the producer of the Steve Carino show here at PlaceMeNation.com.
Yep.
So that's it, PlaceMeNation.com. Please visit once and often if you're interested in writing for us. Info at PlaceToBeNation.com, Twitter, Place2BNation, and Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation as well. Big news out in the world, Scott. We'll take just a couple minutes here. Let's talk about the impending possible sale of TNA. Mm-hmm. And also, tomorrow is the announcement of the new subscription numbers for WWE Network, which could cause some shockwaves throughout the world of wrestling. What are your takes on both of those real quick? I know we'll get more on the main event next week. But
yeah, the TNA is no real surprise. You know, Spike has not been thrilled. The shows are just not good. I don't know what the future holds for a lot of those guys. You know, I mean, everyone could. We've talked about it privately about WWE cherry picking who they want, but they would have taken them anyway. You know, Samoa Joe, and I think the only guy they probably would want, if he's, you know, in a right state of mind, would be your boy Kurt. Other than that, and maybe Austin Aries, but they could have taken him a while ago.
Well, they can take Kurt anyway because his contract's up.
Yeah, they can give him a Legends deal, and then if he wants to, I'd love to see him back on the roster, though. I think he'd be a good injection into the
I think he's definitely coming back in September.
Yeah,
or at least by the, if not September, maybe as a Rumble guy.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
What do you think the pop would be if he came out and jumped Rusev?
Oh, it'd be freaking amazing. I you talk about I don't know, I don't want to know what your physical status would be at that point, but it would be huge. It'd be absolutely huge. I mean, I watched the WrestleMania Rewind today of Ray when he won it at 22 in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and I realized I really miss Kurt. I miss our Kurt, not
right.
their Kurt.
Well,
as much as
Kurt,
he had good matches
good
in TNA, yeah. he had good matches.
I mean, he's been there almost as long as, because when did he get there? I mean, he's been there longer than he was in WWE.
October 06 was when he
till now. I mean, that's
that.
About 8 years almost.
Yeah.
He was in WWE for what? Late 99 till August 06.
Yeah.
About the same when you probably count his time off. But
I would like, I mean, the one guy I'd love to see come to WWE, because I've liked him since he's been with the since he's been there, was Bobby Roode. I'm a big Bobby Roode guy. And James Storm. I don't think they take James Storm.
So do you think this is it? Or do you think they're going to find, because I mean, Spike has kind of denied it, but from everything I'm seeing, the only reason they're not coming out and saying it is because they don't want to tank the ratings in these final few months. They want the guys
right.
that the shows are still going to be good. Do you think there's any chance they find another network, or do you think they're screwed?
I think they're screwed.
Do you think they try and do a Netflix type thing?
That's
been a rumor too. They might try and get something like that, like basically on WWE Network.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Netflix will want to touch that. They may have to raise their prices, and they already did that once. If you're a new subscriber, I know that.
Why would they have to raise their price? What if they did something like WWE Network
and just did a flat rate for just them?
No, you didn't do it. You don't do anything. I guess Netflix would pay for it. Yeah, I don't know how it would be.
Yeah, no, they'd have to eat something.
Yeah, I guess you wouldn't just pay. You wouldn't get people. I mean, if people aren't paying $9.99 for the Dirty Network, I can't imagine they're going to pay for,
you know, $15 bucks for
or even $5.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm talking about like if you're still getting DVDs and that kind of thing. But
yeah.
As to the other thing, so we'll see what happens. I mean, I think there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of ifs and maybes and what ifs, and there's a lot of rigmarole going on about it, so I think we have to keep waiting and see how things play out. As for the other thing, I don't think it's, I mean, maybe it's just, you know, the and I'm not even making a joke about it, maybe it's our pal Jay Hinchy and me, but I'm feeling a little optimistic. Not like, oh my god, 5 million subscribers. I mean, I don't think it's that.
I think it's going to go up. I mean, I do think it's going
to
go up.
They need to go to England and they need to go to Canada. More.
Well, I think that announcement is going to come. If not tomorrow, I think shortly after this.
Yeah.
That it's going to launch internationally. What they need is just to not have something to make them panic and steer, of course, because I still think this is the way to go.
I think
they're going to get there.
Yeah,
but
I do too.
They need to be patient. They need to not panic, and they need to be committed to it, and they need to just forge ahead and keep improving it. And I do think this is the future of television and the future of how things are going to be eventually. So I think they need to stay on the cutting edge, stay ahead of the curve.
Yep.
Don't panic. Don't end it. Don't back off. You know, just they've committed so much to it. They need to see it through. So I hope the numbers went up just enough to at least make them say, okay, we're headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
Even if it's not what they promised or it's not what people are expecting and they're going to get made fun of, they still just need to stay the course. I think the worst thing they could do is doing about face and get all caught up with themselves.
Yeah, I think the TV thing, I think they're over that now. I mean, they're still getting some stuff. I mean, they're still airing 30 on Saturday night. They're finally doing things. What they didn't do in the beginning, JR, that they're doing now is they're promoting like huge, not huge, but like their best stuff. Like they're finally treating the network like a network. Like they're airing promos Sunday night, SummerSlam 98. I mean, as we all know, it's my favorite SummerSlam ever. But they're treating it like a network where they're doing promos, not just like watch main event on the network. Like Sunday night, 8 o'clock, SummerSlam 98. Bingo. There you go.
Well, and they're like, doing more like scheduled program that makes sense. Like they're doing all SummerSlams in August. They've been doing more August pay-per-views. They've been showing Saturday night's main event on Saturday nights. They've been doing more of that kind of stuff, which is cool. So, but yeah, as we said, we'll cover this more next Wednesday. We'll have more information out on the main event and on
Kevin's show.
Yes, and on Kevin's show as well. So why don't we take a quick break, because I think Kevin's about ready to join us. And okay. When we come back, we'll talk some 2002. Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant.
Sorry.
The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and look for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Hey, this is Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
All right, Nation, we are back from break, and it's sad here because we only got a couple more installments of the series. It started a while ago when we forged quite the friendship with this guy and launched a podcast that I co-host. He's my co-host on, and he's the voice of some independent promotion out there, but he still takes the time to join us here, and that is my good, close, personal friend, Mr. Kevin Kelly. Kevin, how are you?
Scott, how are you doing over there?
I
am fantastic, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be with you. I don't get to talk to you that often, but it's nice to have you on tonight.
Well, listen, you've done a lot for that kid that you work with. What's his name again, JR?
Jason.
Jason.
John.
He's it.
Something like that. Tom. I don't know. JT. Something like that.
It's going to suck when the Kevin Kelly show just vanishes and no one's going to happen.
You know, it's my own fault. I should have not gotten fired when I did. I could have stuck around and, maybe strung along to 04.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
And we could have done more of these. But no, I had to go and get fired on the day of the shock and awe campaign.
You had to be angry all those years. And
yeah. So, yeah, this has worked out pretty well.
Yeah, we'll have to come up with some other reason to have you on, I guess.
You can join.
That'll
for
be great.
Watches.
I can. You know, I'll moderate political debates with R.J. Brewer.
Yeah, let's go well. Somehow we survived that. I think we've covered everything, though, because the first time we had you on was the end of 96, and that was pretty much when you had started. So I don't think we can even go back and cover anything. I think we've pretty much touched everything.
Right, unless we want to do it all over again. Maybe I'll have completely new stories.
We probably could. We should definitely try
it. I remember this.
The reboot.
I think we should just start having you watch random stuff on WWE Network and then come on and talk about it.
That would involve me having to get WWE Network.
Well, Scott can give you his login.
I can give you my login.
Okay, I can do that.
If you get me a Ring of Honor replica world title belt, everything will be
Jesus,
fine.
Jesus, what a mark.
I'm a collector. No, a mark would be, can I meet somebody and have their autograph?
I think the belt thing's right up there.
What?
Collector. James Vandenberg over here. Collector of rare oddities.
James Vandenberg. All right. That was my favorite thing on WCW.
Yeah, Mortis and Wrath.
I love Mortis and Wrath, and I love James Vandenberg. I just thought it was cool and different.
Did you like Glacier?
No, because that was, I just didn't get it. That was hokey and cartoony.
You know, Kev, you could be Chad's backup on our Raw viewing shows if you'd like.
Oh, God, no.
Well, you don't want to watch old 93s?
Well, wait a minute. No, going back in time and watching old Raws?
Yeah, we watch all the 1993 ones live.
We've been watching the 93s, and it's like Mystery Science Theater 3000 with Raw.
I could do a guest shot once in a while, sure.
There you go.
That'd be fun.
That'd be fun. I don't want to do the new stuff.
No, I don't ever talk about. The most I talk about new stuff on podcasts is with you. So what's that? 20 minutes a show?
Yeah, maybe.
In between ridiculous stories.
So, all right, let's dive in.
Kevin Kelly show, by the way, every other Wednesday, placetobenation.com. Next Wednesday, Kev, we got Dale Arnold joining us. This is going to be a lot of fun. Play-by-play guy for the former play-by-play for the Bruins. Now does a pregame show, and he has a show on WEI in Boston. A well-known sports guy up here and a huge wrestling fan.
Good, and that's going to be great. And good job reaching out to Mick Foley. I don't know why I hadn't thought of Mick.
Yeah, we're going to get Mick.
That's a no-brainer, and I think he'll do it.
We just
got to coordinate with his schedule. I have a feeling he'll do it.
Okay, that's full credit to our PR guy, Mr. Jason Greenhouse. So shout out there to Greeny. Took care of that for us.
He nailed the quote, by the way, of Caddyshack the other day.
Yes.
So I copied that onto my profile. And yep. Anytime anybody puts any lines, they just have to put a line from Caddyshack. Caddyshack fans know it. And then they throw in their own Caddyshack quotes.
Well, you can give me credit for that because I posted a picture on my page of I was eating at lunch at a restaurant on a golf course, and there was a Bushwood plaque on the wall, a picture of Carl Spackler and Judge Smales and the Gopher, and so I put it on there and I quoted, I think it was, "Will you come loot for my stretch marks?" And yeah. then the floodgates open. So
right, I thought maybe Scott that was some memorabilia you had picked up. And I was like, oh, that's like a silent auction or something he went to, and it's great. You know, even yep. bet, you know, as long as you're posting it from somewhere, I think it's cool.
Yeah, no, I've seen it in stores, the Bushwood plaque. I'd love to
buy it.
At least
Kevin can retweet Caddyshack quotes and not shit about his show that we're trying to promote, but that's fine.
Now, if we did a Caddyshack show.
Yeah, right.
There you go.
Oh, a watch? I don't know if that, you know what the problem with that is, Kev, because Sony mentioned that to me. I don't think we'd be able to do comments. I think we'd just read the dialogue. We just fire lines off of the movie and that's
dramatic
it.
Reading. We get the script. We have a bunch of people on.
That'd be tremendous.
Yeah.
How do you measure yourself from other golfers? My height. Wait, we have to stop before we do the whole thing. All right.
Okay, come on.
Kevin, did you see what launched yesterday, though? The Seinfeld rewatch I told you about every episode.
I got to get on that.
Get on it. Okay. 2002. Right. Let's do it.
Should I start? You want to start?
Yeah, I'll start us up here.
Okay. Good.
You all right, Kev?
Oh, that's the mute button.
I thought you were going to say, we don't want to do it. I want to do Caddyshack instead.
All right. Let's talk about the new GMs, Kevin Kelly. Bischoff's shocking signing. What was it like backstage when he showed up? Did you like how they used him initially? And what did you think of Stephanie on SmackDown?
Well, the Bischoff signing. Now, I was not at the TV when he was signed. However, it was a complete shock to everybody in the company. And the stories that they told about them, you know, like hiding him away from the boys and everything like that, and Booker's reaction when he was the first, I guess one of the first people to see him, was genuine. And there, double-edged sword, good and bad, shocking, yes. Why is this creep here? You know, was the other part of it. And I was calling my buddies and was like, did you guys see him? Did you know this was happening? And they were like, no, this was a complete shock. There was a car sitting outside. We didn't know what it was. And it was Bischoff. And Stephanie on SmackDown, that was kind of good because they really, like, that's the era when I just remember, like, they really tried to, like, pump up her being sort of a sex symbol. Mm. And that made for good television because I know Heyman was producing it at the time. And was making sure that they had a lot of that stuff. There was heavy Heyman influence on SmackDown during this era.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we'll get to that with the SmackDown 6 and everything. What did you think of them teasing? You mentioned, you know, Booker being the first to see Bischoff backstage. They teased it before the announcement. Did you like that? I thought it worked because it kind of gave you the break to go call your friends and family, as they always say. Tell them to tune in because Bischoff's coming on. Did you think that worked instead of just surprising and having him walk out?
I did, and it was, again, done on purpose, done for a reason, something like that to try to use the shock of not promoting something ahead of time to, you know, but not wasting it at the same time. They, you know, if they would have announced it the week before, there would have been significant buzz and maybe the rating would have been higher. But just the idea of that shocking, you must watch Raw every week. You can't afford to miss anything. You never know what's going to happen. That mantra certainly lived true, but they did give you at least enough of notice to go and, like you said, go and call somebody.
Did you feel like the show's really started to feel split finally here now? They got the GMs, the Flair-Vince thing is over. trying to make things stand out a little bit more.
And there was a little bit of, yeah, I do. And there was a little bit of a rivalry, at least inside the TV studio. There was, everybody worked together. And in fact, some of the people that worked on Raw helped sort of captain SmackDown, if you will, and vice versa. Those that were captains on Raw, for lack of a better term, just in the hierarchy, those that had bigger responsibilities for the Raw show, for the taped elements, they kind of took a back step but helped out on the SmackDown thing, because that was really an all hands on deck deal. With Raw, you had two live hours and that was it. That was done. A lot of the work was done, you know, pre and day of. SmackDown, of course, was taped, and then they agonized over getting it exactly right frame by frame. So a lot of folks pitched in and helped out. But I know the SmackDown crew was very proud of what they were doing and was really trying to set themselves apart from Raw.
Speaking of SmackDown, maybe one of the most memorable SmackDown moments ever was that July 4th when Hulk Hogan and Edge defeated Billy and Chuck to win the tag team titles. Hogan's first ever, I think in any promotion ever, tag team championship. Your thoughts and memories of that night?
I just remember Edge's face. Like, legitimately thrilled to win. You know, and I had thought, Hogan was so cool back then anyway, when he came back and the way he came back. No negativity at all around him. None of that old, you know, the fear of what could have been with Hogan, what rumors we had. Oh, my God, what Hogan are we going to get? Are we going to get the good Hogan or are we going to get the bad one? And we got the good one here, who was just happy to be there and was doing great stuff. And Edge was such a fan that, you know, it was just great to see. It was an awesome, you know, kind of cool moment for both and a very patriotic day. That got a low rating, if I do remember, because it was July 4th.
It was cool.
You think they should have put it? They think they should have put it on another night then?
I don't know. I always think you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You do what you can to try to boost a rating, and there was great symbolic measure there. Depending on what was going to happen afterward, maybe they needed to do it then. Maybe it was done on purpose to try to boost a rating.
That's what I would think, because they do it probably be low anyway at the holiday.
Yeah, it's going to be low. Maybe this will boost it up a little bit, and those that didn't see it. We'll certainly catch him on the next go-round. We'll see him next week, and they'll watch it then.
And it fits so well with the Real American returning for the first time.
Yeah, and everything. It's certainly not as impactful if you do it on July 11th.
Right. So Austin had walked out. We covered that last time. The Rock returns, shows up on TV, and cuts a promo on Austin about taking his ball and leaving, which many fans, and from what I've read, many people backstage found it to be a little bit hypocritical since Rock had done the same thing over the last couple of years. So talk about that promo, and then we got a couple more Rock questions here.
Well, he's a Rock guy. Hard to be critical of him, but rang a little hollow. You know, still was the same guy that we knew. Just it just wasn't him. I don't know why he did it. I don't know why he felt like he needed to do it or wanted to do it. Certainly was asked and felt strongly enough to do it. And if he didn't, he would have probably said, nah, I don't think so. But for whatever reason, he felt strongly enough to do it. I think it hurt his, I would say, credibility a little bit and affected some of the perception of him, at least in the short term.
So he comes right back into the title picture. Wins the title of Vengeance. What were your thoughts on that, him getting the belt back? Did you think it's mainly because he was the right guy to transition it over to Brock Lesnar? Was there any hard feelings there that he had been gone, comes right back, wins the belt, and moves right into the SummerSlam main event?
No, not at all. Pre-planned. Knew it was going to happen, so that was just it. Like, we have to make sure that he is the overwhelming crowd favorite. So if he comes back and he poos on Austin, and there's people that like Austin, is that really the best thing that he should be doing right now? Mm-hmm. No, I think they could have done it another way. However, the way they built up the SummerSlam main event, I thought was terrific. And that was a lot of Shane McMahon influence, believe it or not. We'll talk more about that.
Another guy who makes a debut on camera here, a guy that would end up being the face of the franchise, but nobody knew that at the time, was, of course, John Cena. Anything out of the gate with him? Did anybody go, yeah, he's our guy for the next 15 years? Was it Jericho's idea to put him over? And I have another Jericho question after that, but your thoughts on John Cena when he first came in that early summer, and was it Jericho's idea to put him over?
I know that Cornette's influence on John Cena, because he was pumping him up so much to The Office, was both good and bad. Obviously, he knew John Cena was going to be something special. However, there right. were Jim Cornette enemies that could have taken that and was like, oh, Cornette likes this guy? Well, let's make sure we, you know, paint him blue and you know, have him scratch his ass on television. So could have been bad, but again, there was enough. He was a nice enough guy and a respectful guy, and there were enough guys that liked him, that liked Cornette, like Taker and Jericho and Kurt Angle, that was not really going to happen. And I can't remember if what Jericho's influence on that was, but it certainly was a great thing. And the way he was kind of getting the rub from the veterans right away helped set him apart. It was a while until he became who he became, and was kind of beginning to flounder a little bit. So it was probably the right thing at the right time. But yeah, that was great the way he debuted and the way he came out. It was just, he was different than the prototype, the character I had seen in OVW, but really it was kind of the same, because he was a likable guy. You know, he was always, even though he was a heel, he was still sort of likable in OVW.
Mm-hmm. Back to Jericho. Were you surprised by his dip down the card? I mean, he went from being the undisputed champion, loses to Triple H twice in 3 months, sliding lower, lower, and now he is losing to the guy no one's ever heard of. Thoughts on that?
I think it was Jericho that first gave me the analogy about the wheel, about it being in the WWE and it being a wheel. Sometimes you're at the top of the wheel and then you get to the bottom of the wheel. Stay on it, though, because eventually you're going to come back to the top again. Jericho always had great perspective with that. He never got too high when he was at the top of the wheel, nor did he get too low when he was at the bottom. You never heard anything about him having the boo-boo face or anything like that. And I really do think that it was him that gave me that analogy, and it's the perfect way to describe it.
Hmm. All right, so from here we head into the big Who Will Triple H Shine With, Raw, SmackDown. We have the DX storyline where Triple H finally turns heel, and they set up the match with him and Shawn Michaels for SummerSlam. So a couple things here. What did you think of that whole circle jerk they had of vengeance, where Triple H comes out and he spends 10 minutes debating what show he's going to sign with, and Bischoff comes out with Shawn Michaels, and Shawn convinces him to go to Raw, and then the next night he turns, they do the DX thing in the ring, Triple H turns on him, and then a couple weeks later HBK gets put to the windshield. So what did you think of that, and did you ever think Michaels would wrestle again when he went out in 98?
Gosh, it was... when he left in 98, no. Didn't think he would ever wrestle again, but when he came back this time, knew it was different, could see he was different, had conversations with him and knew he was different, and you know, prayed with him and Eddie Guerrero, the three of us did. It was awesome. So I knew he was a much different guy, and he truly believed that faith healed his back. So you could take that for what it's worth. Was he ever really injured? I don't know. It's not for me to question, not for me to judge. But he really believes that prayer is what healed him. So his back was healed enough for him to be able to go out and wrestle. Scared me to death, at least the first few times he did, because I didn't know what was really going on. But, yeah, just that whole thing with Triple H was just like, oh, come on, enough already. We know everyone loves him. Yes, Vince, he's your future son-in-law. I got it.
Should they have drawn out the DX stuff a little bit more? Or did you think it was fine that it only lasted like that one night?
No, it was fine, because it was shock value. We had to get SummerSlam. You know, when would it have happened if it didn't happen then? Mm-hmm. So,
Then that set up
what happened the next week, which then gave us enough time to promote SummerSlam.
Did you think it was worth the move to turn Triple H heel? Do you think he had run his course already after 6 months as a face after the comeback?
I think so. It's just his natural fit. It's where he wanted to be, and especially with being able to work with Shawn. You know, that was where Shawn needed to be at this point, and that was you know, it's Triple H's game and his show kind of deal. So let him be the big dog on Raw and be the big heel and wrestle Shawn, whatever he wanted to do at that point. I guess it was now Triple H's time, for better or worse.
Was it? I know we had talked about this briefly in the last one, but since he was a face when we ended, was it Hogan coming back that kind of derailed that, or was the plan probably all along for him to eventually be a heel in 2002?
I don't know. Because Hogan's comeback was surprising when it did happen, and all the kind of cards falling into place the way they were. I'm not sure. I think it was probably a lot of it probably had to do with Shawn, because if he does turn, who's he going to work with? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the big thing. So Shawn's going to come back. So therefore, we know and this could have been many months before. Shawn's feeling good. Shawn wants to come back. This wasn't a decision, I'm sure, that was made over the July 4th weekend. This was probably talked about many, many months ago. Well, when are you going to come back? Let's do SummerSlam. Okay. You know, again, he's not going to come back for the, you know, whatever the July pay-per-view was, whatever it was. He's not going to come back in May, or he's not going to come back in October. He's going to come back for one of the big guys. So come back for SummerSlam. All right. So since we're going to do this, then we need to turn here. Oh, Hogan's back now. It's perfect time, et cetera, et cetera. So everything kind of was contingent around, I'm sure, Shawn coming back. And then giving it enough time to be able to set the matchup, because that's where we wanted to go. I doubt Shawn wanted to work with a lot of people. And it's kind of, until he was really sure of how he was going to feel, I think he probably only wanted to work with Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was just going to be one match, if it was just going to be one program, then that would have been it. So just work with whoever he felt comfortable with, whoever could have used the rub, whoever he felt like he could, you know, help out, and his buddies and everything like that. Cause Triple H was always very good to him. And, so that's kind of the way it worked out.
Another guy who came back from injury, albeit a shorter time frame than Shawn Michaels, was Chris Benoit. Plans to quickly move him back up the card. He was in the main events when he got hurt in 01. And what was his mental state like? Was he happy to be back? What were things like with him when he came back?
Very, just again, was always such a quiet. You never knew whether he was happy, sad, you know, whatever. Everything was cool with Benoit. Happy to be back, ready to go. What are we doing? Okay, sounds great. Was always one of those guys. Again, that's what led to, you know, him it being such a shock of the way everything ended a few years later. Who would have ever believed? Because he was always such a middle-of-the-road guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Oh, everything sucks. Oh, okay. Oh, everything's great. Oh, okay. Never too high, never too low. So, yeah, I don't think there was any hesitancy with moving him back up the card. Again, it's just, where is he going to fit in? How are we going to, you know, where is there a need and where is there a log jam? So, there was probably, I'm sure Heyman wanted him, you know? The way it kind of worked out. So, okay, so which is the best fit for him? Let's put him here. He can have matchups against so-and-so.
Hmm.
All right, one of the things I've been looking forward to most to talking to you about is the Hulk Hogan versus Brock Lesnar match on SmackDown. So Brock beats him clean, wipes the blood on his chest, beats him with the bear hug, makes him pass out. The rumors out there is that the plan is for Hogan to come back later in the year and get his win back. And rumors were that would be a Survivor Series. That Vince said, no, we're not doing that. You're not beating this guy. And that's why Hogan walked out, didn't come back till February. Is that true? Because I know you mentioned the happy, the good Hogan is here where he started to kind of turn dark again. Or is that all bullshit?
I don't remember that. But isn't that the way wrestling works? I do for you. Now you do for me.
Right. This is a unique case, though. I mean, to me, this isn't a case where you can have the 50-year-old Hulk Hogan coming in beating your 22-year-old future of the company world champion that had just won the belt, and you're going to have Hogan come beat. I mean, I would side with Vince if that was true.
Well, I never would have made the deal. You know, you don't make...
Did he make the deal?
I don't know. That's what I mean.
Did he spin the wheel?
I could see Vince being like, we really want to do this now. Let's worry about the future down the road. You know, as long as he got that main event and got that visual with Hogan, he was good. He would do whatever it took to get Brock Lesnar over at that level.
Do you think it helped his development? Do you think it was a big part of it that went over Hogan?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Just the wiping of the blood. Just that was such a symbolic moment. It wasn't, you know, he wasn't going to have his physically best match ever, but he was going to crush Hulk Hogan on television. You can't do, even though Hogan, of course, at 50, shell of himself, it's still Hulk Hogan. And continued to build around Brock Lesnar and give him every opportunity and avenue to get over as big as he possibly could.
Mm-hmm. Big debut, summertime, Rey Mysterio, maybe one of the last. There was one more guy that would debut in 03, but Rey Mysterio is one of the last two major WCW guys that hadn't come in yet. Memories of his early weeks? He looked awesome when he came in, and him and Kurt Angle had some great matches, including at SummerSlam. Thoughts on early Rey when he came in?
He was I know there was a lot of debate because of his name. Originally, of course, Rey Mysterio Jr.
Jr., yep.
No, we can't have that. And I was part of the contingent, like, so what's the problem? You tell the story of him being a second generation star and you explain the lineage of the mask and the Mysterio name and how he was. Don't you want to give everything a reason? And it's like, no, he's Rey Mysterio. Cause then people will ask, well, why is he a junior? It's much cooler when it's Rey Mysterio. And you guys don't get it. A lot of that. So
I would agree with that. Like, if they ever thought he was going to go anywhere, I think the junior would hamper it.
I don't know if it would. I think it'd be 50-50.
Every great superstar is an easy name. Rey Mysterio Jr. is not. Rey Mysterio is.
Yeah.
It's not Hulk Hogan Sr.
I don't know. I just...
Well, is, but...
It's not Mrs. Triple H, Scott Criscola.
Maybe because I was so used to saying it,
yeah,
it wasn't an issue for me.
Well, I mean, what level of plans did they have for this guy? Was he coming in to be like he was in WCW, just a cruiserweight with his Mexican lucha?
No, he was going to be a top guy.
Right. Then to me, you had to. I think it made perfect sense. Like, yeah, the Rey Mysterio Jr. thing to me is like, all right, is a little lucha Mexican guy.
But there is a sect, and this is, again, there was a sector of the wrestling audience population that knew him as Rey Mysterio Jr.
But he had been on. Change his name to like Don Mysterio. I mean, he's still Rey Mysterio.
I understand that. And
Don
again,
Mysterio.
It's splitting hairs. And it wasn't, again, like a huge thing, but it was, what do you think? And I was like, well, I think he should be what he was, because then it gives you the opportunity to explain, as I just told you. And I said, there is also a certain sector of the fan base that's how they know him.
Yeah, see, that's I will agree with Kevin on that. It's not like, see, WWE thinks that only only they watch their show. Even though, you know, 90% of us watched WCW and knew he was a junior, that we're all going to go, that it really was going to change that
much. I
think
it was, yeah.
That's all.
The junior just seems a little bit unnecessary, that's all.
It's not a hill I was going to die on, for sure.
It's Don Mysterious. What's he doing in the Impact Zone?
Don Mysterious.
Don Mysterious. Get out of
here. Shirts.
I don't know today. What's Don Mysterious doing here? Swerve.
You must be with Dixie.
Yeah, so, and I think it was, they didn't have him right away with that, with the catapult entrance, or did they?
Yeah, I think they did.
They did, okay, and I knew it was right away. I know, because I was at the, I forgot, working on this issue of the magazine, I was at the ROH Dojo this week in a tryout camp, and they have a bunch of old wrestling magazines, and that was one of them, the Rey Mysterio debut, and I think there was... Even some, I would have to look at it again. I think there were some junior mentions in that article because the decision hadn't been made when it was first written. So, but again, that was, yeah, just great the way he came. That's right, because he came, who's that jumping out the sky and had the whole,
yep.
The leaping thing was on the cover of the magazine. Yeah. So, yeah, he did start off like that. Awesome. Just loved it.
Mm. And the match with Angle, just amazing at SummerSlam.
Oh, my gosh. one of the best matches.
I think one of the best sub 10-minute matches.
Right.
At least in company history. And I think it's on the short list of best opener in company history. I mean, you got Bret Owen at WrestleMania 10. I mean, then this comes into the discussion, I think.
Played off of, you know, Angle and Taz at the Rumble.
Yep.
You know, let's have Kurt, the opener, and do it with Mysterio and have a great, you know, 7-8 minute match and blow the doors off everything.
What did you think of Ric Flair going full-time now, back in the ring after the co-owner thing? Did you think it was the right move, or did you think he should have been like a special attraction in the ring? And what did you think of him losing to Rico on Raw?
I loved watching Ric Flair, listening to him, didn't enjoy watching him wrestle. Every time he wrestled, I think it took a little bit of, you know, sand out of the hourglass. So I don't know. I was mixed. I understand why he wanted to and why he did.
So was it fully his call to get out of the owner thing? And back
I think it
ring?
Was something he wanted to do.
Yeah.
He wanted to get back and wrestle and work with some of the young guys and help get some of them ready for the next level. Be on the road, all that stuff. Styling and profiling. Pants around his ankles. You know. Typical Nature Boy Ric Flair stuff.
Was he okay being in the face role, at least for now? Or was it planned always to get it back to the heel side?
Well, I obviously, eventually you want to get back there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where he can lead somebody through. If his goal is to work with young guys, and look at all the great matches he had when he was world champion and he was working with, you know, Green as Grass Sting and a stiff Lex Luger and every other turd that he had to carry along the way. Just listen to me. We'll get you through it. You know, do this, do this, do this, do this. So it was a that's where he can lead. So that makes it the most advantageous as far as the match is concerned. Plus, it always ties in with his character and allows him to really be the Nature Boy. But it's tough when everybody loves you and, you know, you still are going to get cheers. So you got to get beat down in order to have a reason to turn. And so there you go.
What were your thoughts on the un-Americans angle, the combination of Test, Christian, Lance Storm? What did you think of those guys?
Loved it. Loved the combination of the three. Enjoyed the... There was always a lot of potential with that. I could see them really doing this and that. It seemed to be over fairly quickly. And I don't know whether or not it had... If it was 3 or 4 months or if it was 3 or 4 weeks. But I remember it being like, wow, they could do this and we could do this. And then you guys can do this. And everybody seemed to be fully on board. And then before we knew it, it was over.
It seems they never really put Regal with them. Like they were kind of teasing it and he was for a little bit. And you're right. I thought there was so much potential there. And then it just ended.
When did they have Regal, Benoit, and Jericho together?
I don't remember that.
Is what, a team?
It was a six-man. It was a six-man main event. I think it was on SmackDown.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't remember the match. But Regal went to Raw in... Well, were the Un-Americans were on Raw, right, Scott?
Yes.
They started on SmackDown?
I remember JR would always talk about them.
Benoit was on Raw, and then he went to SmackDown. I don't know. There must have been some small window where they were all on the same show.
Oh, but it was just – I loved it. When I loved Regal and Benoit and Jericho, it was a six-man. I think it was a main event on SmackDown. I don't even remember who they wrestled. I just remember seeing the three of them on one side of the ring, and I was like, damn, this is awesome. Nobody could beat them if it was real.
Did you like the Booker and Goldust team? Did you think they waited too long to put the belts on them? They built it for about 4 months before they finally did it, teased it a few times. Did you think it revitalized Booker when he seemed like he was sort of run into a little bit of trouble?
That's the perfect word, revitalized. I thought it was the exact right thing for Booker. Enjoyed it a lot. Enjoyed everything. I always liked everything that Dustin did. So, yeah, and they got along well. So, just was good. I don't think it took too long. You know, if it's not right away, 4 months, it's okay. Time goes quick.
Well, it seemed by the time they did it, they were ready to elevate Booker to a singles role. So it just felt kind of funny that they sidetracked to the Elimination Chamber. Then they finally give him the belt at the end of the year. And then they don't keep him that long because they're ready to move Booker on to bigger things. So it felt like maybe it could have been a little bit sooner, that's all. But I mean, I do think it revitalized Booker. I thought he was definitely floating aimlessly after all the NWO bullshit that kind of killed off his steam. And I thought it was a good use of Goldust, too. And they had some great heat and they had some really good tag matches.
Exactly right.
Now, Undertaker, the former champion, lost it at Vengeance. Very quickly in that month span to SummerSlam, ended up turning face again. Was he destined to turn face again so soon after being a heel for that 6 months? Did the crowd kind of re-cheer for him so they kind of made it happen? Or because the faces were so, there was such a dearth of them, he had to turn face? What were your thoughts on that?
It was one of those things like, Taker was to me always sort of the, they didn't always plan around him, and sometimes they took him for granted because he was not in great health, and for as long as he wound up hanging on, and I think I said this the last time, he had great matches and was always sort of a focal point, but was never like the main cog in the wheel, but he should have been. Now, I know Vince always kind of focused on his top four guys, and Taker was generally in that conversation, but a lot of times Taker would be number four. And so it's like, okay, we need you to do this now. All right. You know, good soldier that he was. And he would do it. I don't remember exactly if that was the case, but I'm just, you know, making sort of the comment in general. Like, did they put a lot of thought into what he was doing at this time? I'm not quite sure. I don't know the full answer to that question.
Did you like his heel run? The beating respect out of people kind of thing. Did you like that?
Yeah, that was I remember, didn't he destroy like Raven on a SmackDown, or was that earlier?
Maven or Raven?
No, Raven.
Raven? Did he beat the shit out of Raven? I don't remember that.
No?
Well, Raven leaves, what, in 03, so it had to be some point around here.
Yeah, that's what I just, that was one that I seem to remember. It was just, yeah, it was beating respect out of him. So I liked it. Different, an opportunity for him to talk trash to people and you know, unleash the big old soup bones, as they used to say.
All right, we talked about the build and the start of the feud. We go to SummerSlam, Triple H, Shawn Michaels. What are your thoughts on that match? Instant classic. Did you think they did too much, though? Did you think they had to go all out and do all the weapons and the blood? Or do you think the simple story of Hunter destroying Shawn's back, Shawn coming back and beating him, would have been more than enough?
Good question. It was what's needed at this time. Sometimes is that the, well, we've got this to fall back on because we don't know physically how great everything is going to be. So at least we've got, you know, the plunder to sort of goon it up if we have to. As it turned out, everything was great. So yeah, it didn't need it. Sort of got lost in it. Becomes, you know, violence for violence sake. Still was the, I think, the prevailing wind of around, you know, big pay-per-view matches, that's kind of the length that you had to go at this point. And especially tying in with, you know, the sledgehammer and the emotion of the turn and the emotion of Shawn's comeback and everything like that. So yeah, they probably could have gotten, again, I'm always a big fan of less is more. Probably could have gotten away with a lot less because of who they were and what they were doing and the way they were doing it. But it's the way they did it. So yeah, it was an instant classic. It's, you know, not one you could show the kids, though.
Do you think maybe part of the reason they did it is because they didn't know if this was it for Shawn and he wanted to go out with a real classic and a crazy match?
I think there was part of that. Is just to have one big ball buster. Who knows what's going to happen? Let's do everything and get it out of our system. And this way, then, if I can't come back and if I can't walk the next day, then I can walk away, head held high, left it all in the ring.
I mean, did they know at that point he may come back again? Because they do the attack where Hunter puts him out with the sledge again at the end of the match. Did they know he may come back? So at the time, I remember the word was that he was probably one and done.
It was that was certainly the belief. Like, you know, when it's somebody's last match, you just know it, right? I don't remember that being the feeling with Shawn. I remember it sort of being there, but there was always such an air of skepticism about Shawn anyway. that nobody really believed him 100%. So he, yes, this is probably could be his only one match back. Yeah, bullshit. I'll believe it when I see it. Ah, see? Fool us again, will you? Then if he would have walked away, it's like, oh, okay, he really did. He was telling the truth this time. He, you know, it, unfortunately, that's kind of the way it was with Sean. But yeah, it was kind of like we didn't know what we were going to get. And a lot of it was going to be on how he felt the next day. And luckily, he felt good enough to be able to continue and continue down the road when the time was right.
The other big match on that card was, of course, the main event we talked about earlier, where Brock Lesnar wins his first WWE championship against The Rock. Thoughts on that match? Could anyone else have been in that slot besides Rock that made Brock look that good? And were you impressed by the fact that this guy just debuted the night after Mania and, what, 5 months later, 4 months later, he's the champion?
Yes, there was very much the feeling of how good is this match going to be? Again, go back a few years to 99, and we did the 60-minute Iron Man match with Triple H and The Rock, and there were some questions as to whether or not Rock was good enough to be able to pull off a 60-minute match. In fact, Triple H openly asked that question backstage.
2000, excuse me,
and was almost asinine in his assumptive measures that he didn't think Rock was good enough. Always thought he was better than The Rock. Triple H could have done the same thing with Brock Lesnar. Okay. Shawn Michaels could have done the same thing with Brock Lesnar. But Rock was good enough to do it as well. You know, a lot of guys, because Brock was really good and really good right out of the gate and really listened. Anybody can, you know, you can slow somebody down, and that was it. So we just had to make sure that Brock was in the right position, didn't try to do too much, but worked hard. And he and Rock spent a lot of time together, I guess, working out together. So they made sure this was right. You know, it was a different kind of match in that regard. And like I had said before, Shane was really kind of influential in the marketing of this match. You know, really worked with us on the magazine, really worked with us on, you know, the website, and helped coordinate a lot of the efforts to make sure that this matchup was built a long time before it was announced. So it was sort of risky, but
well, that's the way that real sports build they did, showing them both working out. Rock was doing his training. Brock, I mean, it was very unique for the time, too, and it really stood out.
Shane, I think, was instrumental in a lot of those vignettes and getting them shot, whether he produced them himself or was just there. I remember his influence on that quite vividly.
So I'm going to read down the whole card to you, Kevin. I want to know if this is the greatest SummerSlam of all time, in your opinion. A very hot Long Island crowd. Kurt Angle defeated Rey Mysterio. Ric Flair beat Chris Jericho. Edge defeated Eddie Guerrero in a very good match. The Un-Americans beat Booker and Goldust. RVD beat Chris Benoit. Undertaker beat Test, and then the two matches we just talked about. Shawn defeated Triple H, Brock over The Rock. Was this the greatest SummerSlam in your mind?
Yeah, the other, I mean, other than Taker and Test, which was good. Not great, but good. Yeah, I mean, look at the talent from top to bottom. Absolutely. Ric Flair, I thought, was kind of, I don't know. He just looked old. Some days he looked good. Some days he looked old and jiggly. And there were... I just remember this was one of those occasions where, to me, he looked old and jiggly. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, as far as name value, as far as titles and championships and history and legacy and Hall of Fames, my God, where else are you going to find that? Who? Everybody except for Christian, Test, and Lance Storm is a Hall of Famer. Should be.
Right. Obviously, Benoit's never going to be.
Benoit notwithstanding yes. for other reasons.
Right. But no,
Would have, no doubt. But Mysterio, Angle, Jericho, Flair, Booker, yes. Goldust, yes.
Edge and Eddie,
yes.
RVD.
RVD, yes. Taker. Benoit, yes.
Taker.
Taker. None the big Triple four. H, Shawn, and Brock Rock.
Even anyway. Heyman in the main event.
Heyman. Yep. Yeah. That's it right there. So, right. How good they
and
had
I think
it
you could then. Argue Christian may go in as just as a tag team guy. I mean, even
compiler.
As
yeah. Yeah, compiler. The Vinny Testaverde, you know, he's a compiler. But poor Vinny. But neat. Yeah, neat when you think about it in terms of history as to how good it was then and where we are now.
Did Cole and Taz feel like a top-level team when we finally had the actual splits and we had JR and Lawler exclusively doing Raw and you had Cole and Taz exclusively doing SmackDown? They got to do that main event. It was the first time since the split that the biggest stage was theirs. Did they feel like a big top-level team doing that match after doing
yeah,
that match?
To me, they did. Now, I was on their side. I was a SmackDown guy because I was a Heyman guy. I used to sit in on their edits and just watch the way Heyman produced the announcers as an effort to get better, as, you know, announcing. So I was happy for them. They deserved it. It would not have worked, and it would have been a slight to the brand if they would not have been allowed to call that match. Now, it was a little awkward and a little clunky because you had one set of announcers doing one match and then another set doing another. Of kind of the imperfect world of the brand split, which they never, ever got worked out. But I felt like they deserved it and did the absolute best. I think Cole and Taz was the best team for Cole. He was never as good, in my opinion, as he was with Taz. So
him and JBL and JBL's first run was very good. But him and Taz during the stretch from 02 to 05 is just really, really good. I mean, there's some right. stuff in early 05 where they are just like really seasoned. That's just awesome commentary right. that they do.
Loved it. Yeah, they were very they became a very good team.
Cole's just really good at setting up Taz, and Taz was great at the ring psychology and telling the story kind of thing. And Cole would give him these great leading questions. And SmackDown became very sports feeling and very sports oriented. They had the really good team that was focused on that on commentary. They would do that tail of the tape and a lot of the build and longer match. I mean, they really did make that show feel very different.
Right. And you had Matt Facts, which was my favorite thing of all time.
Yes. So good. We'll get to that. any other memories of Heyman booking SmackDown? The SmackDown 6, it was Benoit and Angle, the Guerreros, Edge and Rey Mysterio. Like I said, a lot of in-ring focus, a lot of great matches each and every week. Did you feel like it was great in the moment? But he kind of unloaded a lot on TV and almost was overload of great matches in a way. Like, it was his old ECW style where he just threw out great TV after great TV, which is awesome. But do you feel like he burned through it really fast?
No, I don't. I see where somebody could think that. But again, that was what they were doing. And that's what those guys were good at. So you could mix them up and have any combination that you could. So, and you could introduce new people into the mix. But again, there's always the pressure to deliver those big main events. So you got to have them get over, and then you're always back into the fallacy, I guess, if you will, that we have to have these big main events, because if we don't, then next week we won't have an audience. Sometimes you might be wiser to switch it up a little bit so that the big main event in 2 weeks feels just as good as what we had last week when it was somebody else and somebody different. But again, you know, you're going in and you're defending why you're doing this each and every week. So maybe Heyman was like, we could do this. And Vince would be like, why are we doing that, pal? Well, all right, let's do this. But then again, I don't see Heyman doing that. I see Heyman going in there and balls to the wall and rolling it all out and saying, this is what we're doing with our best six wrestlers. So there you are.
And that doesn't even count the, you know, Brock on top. those were the
right.
six upper mid-card guys.
Right, which was, but they were still kind of, you know, sort of protecting Brock.
Right.
Just because he was the champion, that didn't mean we could now throw him into the ring with anybody.
Right.
We still had to be careful.
Very great roster and the perfect guy booking it for that that fall. It was just a great run, a great like 4 months for that brand.
Right. Yeah. My favorite era of, you know, of working there was during that time. as far as a fan, being a fan and watching the product. I didn't think it got any better than that. I know what you're saying. The days of T.L. Hopper, how could you, you know, slight that, Kevin?
Freddie Joe Floyd.
And I know Freddie Joe Floyd and the Goon, you know, and Mark Marrow made me pine. You know, I pined for those days during, you know, all of this so-called good wrestling in 2002. But, you know,
I know deep down you're missing your gang wars.
That's right.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Love your Truth Commission. Ugh. Maybe that'll be the next way we have you on. We're going to have you watch all the Truth Commission matches. They can still come over here and try and tell us that the gang wars is awesome.
Speaking of Brock at the top on SmackDown, three questions here. First, did you agree with Brock taking the title of SmackDown and them having to create a new top title for Raw?
I agreed with Brock winning, and I was split. I did like the idea of the one world champion between the two brands to make that special. But I do understand creating that SmackDown champion. So, yes, I did see it. I do understand why they did it. Brock was the right guy to be on that brand and to be that champion wasn't my first choice, but I understand why they did it as far as splitting it up.
Did you agree with Triple H just having it taken out of a Halliburton and handed to him? Forget him. Let's put it this way before I get your jaded answer. Forget him specifically. The whole prospect of just having a guy being handed a title. And did it just look worse because it was him? Let me put it that way.
The optics of it were really bad because it was him and with Bischoff involved in it. So, yeah, it was terrible. Rotten. The worst. I know you were thrilled.
Well, I was happy he won the belt. I would have been happy with the tournament. What do you think of a tournament? You think they should have started a tournament that culminated at Unforgiven?
I hate tournaments. Kevin Dunn says, I hate tournaments.
I think that was a big reason why they didn't do a tournament.
He's stupid. Tournaments are great.
He is stupid.
Tournaments are great.
Your boy was handed the belt, so there you go.
Time to play the game!
I thought you were going to play the medley, too. Kevin could have sang the songs. No.
Well,
all right.
Do you think, though, as much as I hate to defend him, I have on this point, like, do you think it helped fuel the Bischoff as power hungry, Triple H is power hungry, so that it's granting this guy? Like, it almost worked in a real heel way, though. Like, I don't think it created any lack of legitimacy if they just had a tournament and had Triple H go over anyway. That would have looked even more masturbatory than it goes through 16 guys.
Okay, so I'm a mark then. Because I saw it from the optics of, here's Bischoff, and he did this type of thing in WCW to the detriment of the brand. You know, we all remember the infamous reset. And the finger poke of doom and all of these different things. And it just had that feeling to me. And I might have been wrong because I was not a proponent of, you know.
Well, part of the story, too,
he'll run anyway.
Well, part of the story, too, was that Hunter was the number one contender. He had won a match to earn the title shot. Brock walked out, and that was Bischoff's explanation. Well, this guy was my number one contender. Now we don't have a champion. He's my champion.
And it, from a logical standpoint, yes, it made sense. It didn't, so it was different. But you still had him handing the belt to Triple H. So it got the reaction that they wanted, boo. But from me and from some others, it also got the reaction, meh. You know, shove him down our throats a little more. It's like, okay, we got it. You love Triple H. You know, eventually, now they look back on it, it's like, boy, you could really see how he was being groomed for the inevitable job of taking everything over because Vince had such a hard-on for him.
What about the rumor that originally the Intercontinental title was supposed to be Raw's top belt?
I don't remember that rumor.
Yeah, before they created the big gold, the rumor was that they were going to have the IC be the main title on Raw and the world title be the main title on SmackDown. Triple H was going to win the IC because remember they merged all the titles. They get rid of the hardcore and the European, and they merge them all into the Intercontinental, and that was going to be the only belt on Raw.
It's interesting from a historical standpoint. Boy, would have made sense. But I don't remember that being talked about seriously back then. And there was a little bit of an element of, well, didn't China, like, wasn't she a contender for the Intercontinental belt at one point, or was that European? I can't remember.
Well, she was Intercontinental champion.
Intercontinental champion. I just read that if that was discussed, like, that would have been, well, Jesus, China was a former Intercontinental
right.
champion.
You know? That's what I'm thinking. Like, that's, and I think that was a story that Hunter thought it looked kind of stupid.
Yeah. The Intercontinental belt was never the top belt. And we could do bigger than that. But it's funny. I don't remember that conversation. Believe it or not, they did have some probably high-level conversations without me in the room. So
no.
In fact, they probably said, oh, now Kevin's gone. Let's talk business.
Let's get to the important stuff.
Yes.
What did you think of all Bischoff's antics on Raw, though? The HLA, 3-minute warning, moving the announcers up to the back. I mean, it sounds like you weren't a fan of it, but I thought he played a really good sleazeball on watching these back again. I thought he played it up well. I thought the HLA stuff was really good. As stupid as it may have seemed, I thought he owned it and played it well. And then the 3-minute warning, beating the shit out of everyone.
I'd say I love those guys. They were my guys from Memphis, so I was happy to see them get on, you know? And that was, you know, Necky and Kimo, come on. That was my Samoan Death Squad or whatever they were called in Memphis. Hot lesbian action. Give me okay, got it. There was that period of time where, you know, you had to watch and it was the Warrior quote. You could only watch, you know, WWE if you were looking through a peephole. It was like so sleazy. So, yeah, that was part of it. And I just didn't like, you know, it was like, I like wrestling. I don't like, you know, BS nonsense, you know, softcore porn.
You didn't like Fink saying lesbians.
Now that's funny. Meat was the best. In fact, I want to have Bobby Cruz on the podcast one time, not only interview him, but also to have him do his Howard Finkel impression of the ring announcement of meat. So yeah, that was always good. But just Raw had things that I didn't like. Raw had Lillian Garcia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Raw had all this BS hot lesbian action stuff.
You don't like Lillian?
No. Horrible. Horse face, no talent. Yuck. Oof. Not attractive at all. Not attractive in the least. And, you know, just didn't like her.
Do you still not like her?
I don't care about her one way or the other. I don't have to work with her anymore. She took the Fink's job. They took the Fink off of Raw for her. Let's take Vin Scully out of the booth. Vin Scully's not going to come back for his 66th season. And let's put, you know, some C-level singer on there. Go ahead. Well, I don't know baseball. Sit in the chair.
Aretha Franklin?
Not even Aretha Franklin.
It's Aretha Franklin.
Yes.
Franklin.
I don't know if the booth could hold her after we saw WrestleMania 23.
Yeah, Jesus.
Bring on the forklift.
Big gal. So, yeah, PU.
Well, it's funny, Kev, because at one point, Cole, it's one of JR's my favorite lines, when he's putting over your boys 3-minute warning, think of all the people he's taken. I forgot what pay-per-view it was. No Mercy, maybe, or something. Think of all the guys they've taken out, the people they've taken out. Lance Storm, Maven, lesbians. so generic. It's like, they've taken out lesbians. But
all the lesbians.
All the lesbians. Speaking of Unforgiven, Triple H's first world title defense was against RVD. He wins. Of course, the Flair heel turn there. Should RVD have won, though? And did you like moving Flair heel, as we talked about earlier, and being H's mentor? What were your thoughts on that whole part?
So give me the first part of the question again.
Should RVD have won the match and the title there?
Who did he beat?
Well, he faced Triple H for the world title. Triple H won. That's when Flair turned heel.
That's right. Okay. No,
and he hit RVD with a sledgehammer.
I thought you said it the other way.
Oh, no.
Okay. This was the beginning of the end as far as me with anything having to do with the creative and realizing that the company was, you know, effed, as far as I was concerned. Now, they still work today. They're still in business, and they're still the worldwide leader in sports entertainment. I got it. Triple H told, and this is from my buddies, Seth Mates and Chris Goff, Big Country, who I worked with at WWE.com and both had a cup of coffee on the writing team before both were let go. Both told me that when they gave the ideas about RVD and Kane beating Triple H, you know, that Triple H said to the writing team, no, why? Well, because I'm better than both of them. That was the rationale. And that came from two eyewitnesses in the room. So when this finish happened, I was just like, you got to be kidding me. Now, I understand you want to beat the, you know, which is, if you go back to SummerSlam, if some people raised an eyebrow about RVD winning, okay, great. And then you have RVD go to the next pay-per-view the next month and be the guy that drops the fall to Triple H so that they can put him together. We stomp on guys to then crush guys instead of elevate to elevate. See? I might be alone in this. I'm one who builds up.
I don't think RVD would have won here, though. They just put the belt on Triple H weeks before.
Don't have him wrestle him.
Well, that I can agree with. I just don't think RVD should have won here. I thought he was
I don't think RVD should have beat Benoit.
Yeah.
RVD shouldn't have beaten Benoit. But then he beats Benoit, which does Benoit no favors. And then he goes and wrestles Triple H and loses to Triple H. So now Benoit's two steps removed from the title. Because ultimately, that's where all of this led to, right? Ultimately, all of this led to Benoit and Guerrero and Triple H. Correct?
Yeah, I mean, not for another year and a half. But.
Exactly. But trust me, it was in the works already. And Triple H knew where all of this was headed. So, there's so many levels of FUs along the way. But I'm crazy. I'm the crazy one.
For all these years. All right. Unforgiven later that night. Undertaker, Brock Lesnar. We get the schmazzy double DQ similar to Ground Zero from Rebecca Undertaker and Shawn Michaels a few years earlier. Was that the plan all along, or is the rumors true that Taker refused the job and he wanted to get to the rematch the next month, so they did a schmazz? Or was it just a general double disqualification to set up the rematch?
I think it was just a general double disqualification to set up the rematch. Don't want to beat either guy. You know? So
why have them fight then?
What?
So then why have them fight?
Well, because you gotta have something.
Gotta have
it faith. Doesn't mean you have to have you don't have to have a clear winner and a clear loser. There are times where a double DQ works.
So the Taker refusal story in your eyes is bullshit.
Never heard it before.
You're the guy that heard about Ricky Morton jacking off under a table.
Did hear that.
So you've heard that one. So
I know.
You haven't heard this one.
No, trying to think if there was. And now, could they have talked about it? Of course, they talked about it. Probably the first question that they asked was, you know, so Brock up, huh? What do you think? No. Okay, what do you want to do? Well, let's do it this way. Okay. That I could see. That's not balking and pitching a bitch. You know, there's negotiations all the time. Not everybody says yes right away. Some people they compromise. A lot of times there's compromise. That's one of the things that Russo hated the most, was compromise. No, this jeopardizes the integrity, you know, it takes away from the integrity of my story or whatever. You're an asshole. How about that?
Do the Un-Americans end too quickly? We talked about them earlier. They only, like we said, maybe a 2-month run. Should they have gone longer and then they pretty much dissipated and we get stuck with, not stuck with, but it ended up being just Jericho and Christian as a team. So
right.
Do you think they ended too quickly, the Un-Americans, and did you like the Jericho-Christian pairing?
Like the Jericho-Christian pairing, just felt badly for Lance Storm, who was sort of to the side.
Shunted.
Yes.
So but he'd end up teaming with Regal anyway, eventually.
Yeah, they wind up putting him and Regal and Tess together, right? Isn't that where we eventually got? Maybe not.
I don't remember.
It was Regal. I'm sorry. You're right. Regal and Lance Storm, which wound up being, I think, one of Lance's most favorite times.
They were a good team.
And they were getting really good. And we'll talk about this in 03, but they were getting really good, and that's when Regal started having all his health problems, and he had to leave, and they switched it all up. But
right.
Jericho Christian was really good. It just sucked to see the Un-Americans go down so quickly, but it felt almost like for Booker with Goldust, that's how it felt to me with Jericho, almost like he was rejuvenated a bit, putting him with Christian and letting him kind of run a rampant.
Right on. Plus, you know, I always thought Christian was better than Edge anyway.
Yes, we know.
But what do I know?
Well, you can tell us what you know about Al Wilson. Why? Now,
what do you mean, why?
That guy was actually Tori's father, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Why?
Why not? Yeah. I can't remember how it started. I think it started because he showed up. And somewhere, somehow, somebody got the idea to put him in the bit and to have Dawn Marie marry him and kill him.
Was Tori good with all this?
Tori?
Yeah, she didn't care.
It wasn't like her father. It was sort of like her stepdad.
Oh.
Help me out here, guys. Come on.
I don't know. That's why we're asking you.
I'm telling you. I think there was some... I don't think... Not to say... Jesus, I don't remember if it was like her birth father. Put it that way.
Okay.
Or... Then on the other side, I don't remember if it was her necessarily pushing this.
I'm thinking it probably was because he wasn't. If he was an actor, he sucked because
he was a rotten.
His promos
actor.
Were very clumsy, like he didn't know what he was doing. So I would almost seem to think it. I think it was his her.
I mean, Wikipedia just says Dawn Marie attempted to marry Wilson's real life father, Al.
Okay, so it was
seemed like it.
I think it was just. Maybe, you know, again, sometimes the craziest ideas are born like this. Who is this guy? Well, that's Tori's dad. Well, what's he doing in catering? Just for example, FYI, you know, not that this happened. Who does he think he is? Look at this doddering old fool. Oh, look, there's Dawn Marie talking to him. Imagine if he had a heart attack right here because, you know, that's a great idea. Let's go pitch it to Vince.
I mean, the highlight of all of it was Taz, how much he hated him on commentary and would just bury him completely left and right. Say he wishes he was dead and all this stuff. I mean,
yeah,
he was like.
That's what they went to.
That was the highlight of.
Can
of
I
all.
Eat pretzels, by the way, while I'm on this show?
No. We've already got enough negative feedback. You're munching during shows.
This and then the cat's going to jump on your head again.
This show is long.
Well, you cannot eat for like an hour and a half.
No, I just enjoy having some pretzels.
I'll kill you.
All right.
You're on TV every week, for Christ's sake. All right.
For God's sakes, man.
Look at Michael Cole, how slim he is. So Dawn Marie, super hot here, though, right? I mean, some of the stuff they did with her and Tori was pretty good. Making out in the hotel room and the lingerie.
Yeah.
Is that tape? Is that full-length tape next to the draws and like somewhere on a shelf that'll never be seen? The full hotel. They kept getting cut off at Armageddon or whatever the hell it was. Armageddon.
Yeah, how far did it get? I think it got pretty far.
Well, they show them kissing. I can't imagine they went much further than that.
I think Dawn was probably down with it.
Oh, I think so, for sure.
Yeah.
She seemed pretty into it.
Boy, she went full of crazy not too long after this.
Yeah, well, didn't she sue them? Didn't she get pregnant and they fired her? Was that her? And then she sued them?
Yeah.
And then she started that bullshit charity thing?
Whoops. I remember Stevie Richards saying he took his wrestlers, whatever that was thing called, to the doctor one time. I'd love it.
I didn't think Stevie Richards went to the doctor.
Oh, maybe it wasn't him. But anyway. Yeah, good times, huh?
Mm. Hot.
Crazy nut bar.
Did the cruiserweight division feel freshened up to you? Ray, Tajiri, then they debuted, you know, Jamie Noble debuted, Kidman. What did you think of the cruiserweight division?
Loved it. It was always a lot of fun. Different matches, bigger ring though, and that was something that I always was kind of like struck by. Like, man, they look small in this ring. They didn't look as small in WCW, especially Ray, you know, and Kidman, and Jamie Noble, you know what I mean. But yeah, just always good stuff. When did we start doing Noble and Nydia? That was with Jamie didn't start, and then we did the vignettes, and that's how Jamie got started, right?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. She was sitting in the locker room with Hurricane and all that, and then he mm-hmm. comes on after.
I love those vignettes. That was one of my most favorite things we ever did.
Yeah, they were really good together. They were. It was that division really was fresh, and that was a good foursome to reignite things. I thought they did a great job. Tajiri was awesome.
That was an extension of some of the stuff that Jamie was doing in Cincinnati. You know, kind of the developmental while he was parked down there waiting for a thing. That Jamie by God Noble kind of came from there. And just you eyeball me, boy, that old type of thing, you know. He was doing that stuff down there.
All right, Kev, it's time to talk about Katie Vick.
Oh, God.
Was Ugh. This the most over Kane ever was heading into this match? He was the tag team champion. He won that TLC match all by himself. Crowd was red hot for him. He was jacked up, back from injury. He was talking almost on the most normal he's ever been in that character. He wins the Intercontinental title, goes to No Mercy, and the week before they do the Katie Vick stuff. Triple H bangs the corpse in the casket and then beats him at No Mercy to merge the belts together. Did that ruin all his momentum? Should Kane have won the title? And what the hell was up with Katie Vick?
Well, again, if we couldn't find a way to throw dirt, we couldn't get enough dirt on top of Kane. As quickly to elevate him, to then turn around and bury him, made Kane and everybody that he beat on the road up completely worthless. That's how the Katie Vick thing affects everything. And that's just, it's a parable, really, if you think about it, because when you do something that's that bad and such a drastic, dramatic burial, you have to think of the collateral damage and how it just affects everyone. Again, Triple H, what do you think about RVD, huh? Drop the RVD? No. Kane? No. How come? I'm better than both of them. So there you go. And thus we're left with Katie Vick. Why the need to do that to him? I don't know what, you know, poor Glenn ever did to deserve this, but there is a special place in hell for whoever's idea this was.
Whatever it was terrible.
What was the reaction backstage like to the casket? And online, a lot of fans immediately rebelled, and there are fans that say they left and never came back after that, or it took them a while to come back, that exact scene turned them off. I mean, who was the Triple H's idea? Was it Vince? I mean, what? Why? Like, just why?
There was a growing sense at this time that Triple H really was starting to get a lot of power, and people within the company didn't like it. And, you know, that whatever good times and good feelings we had had during the war with WCW was over now. And that this guy was being given such power, and it was just going to lead to no good. So, yeah, this Katie Vick thing was disgusting and shocking and stupid and horrible and bad and wrong on every level possible. And it was very difficult to go to work. And it was very difficult to go to work and then have to sit there on Tuesday and put a smiley face on and not just scream and say, the company that I work for is run by mental cases, because if they think this is good, then they're wrong. And I must not understand the industry in which I work. And I don't understand my employer right now, because I just don't get it. And I was, you know, and again, you're made to feel like, well, what's the matter? What's the matter, pal? You don't get it? No, I don't get it, Vince. It fucking sucks, and you're horrible. So, excuse my French.
Where do you rank on this No Mercy show, something much better than what we just talked about, the culmination of that tag title tournament when we had to have SmackDown tag belts, of course, the blue ones compared to the red ones. That Angle Benoit versus Edge Rey match may go down as one of the greatest tag team pay-per-view matches of all time, if not just tag team matches, period. What do you think?
It was, yes, and I'm trying to think, and you just got me thinking of where I would put it kind of in that, in pantheon of great matches. At or near the top, almost forgotten about. Isn't it funny? People, there, I think a lot of people might say, oh, yeah, I forgot how good this match was. Forgot how great this match was. Holy crap.
Amazing.
Yeah, just again, four athletes in their prime, letting it all hang out, tearing it up. Didn't know who was going to win. Didn't know the finish going in. I was doing stuff at the studio at the time, so I'm watching it there, and was just like, "Wow, holy crap, that was great!" And there you go. Great, loved it.
Did it almost feel like not even just one of those times in history where the tag teams felt main event level in a way? So it didn't feel like a demotion for Edge to be back in a tag team. Or for Benoit Angle to be in a tag. Like, it felt almost like such a high level of quality that it didn't feel like they were demoted to the tag division.
Yeah, Bubba Ray Dudley and I had this conversation about tag team wrestling overall, and that in spite of, and one of his goals was to have a tag team main event in WrestleMania, because they said it would never, ever be done. And there were times where tag team wrestling felt main event worthy. I don't think we ever got close to it being the ones who would main event WrestleMania, but this certainly was at a time where you could stack this up against any other, and it's like, wow, I forgot how good tag team wrestling was.
All right, on that same card, we had another great match, Hell in a Cell, Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. Did you like this style of cell match? No big bumps, lots of blood, just beating the crap out of each other, kind of gory, but no crazy, you know, stunt level stuff. And was Brock now a legit star after winning this match?
Well, yeah. I mean, the optics of it at the end, he had slayed the Undertaker and standing on top of the cell, and that was it, right? After he won, didn't he go back, climb up the cell, stood on the top of it?
Yep. Yeah. Held the belt over his head. Yeah.
That was it. That's pretty much it. Yeah. You know, a lot of blood during this era. Holy crap. There was a ton of blood.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about that. It was like, damn.
I know you're not a huge fan of the blood, but did you prefer it to the big bump?
Oh, my God, yes.
Okay.
I hate big bumps. I can't stand it.
You cannot lie.
No, I hate it because, you know, I'd rather, guys bleeding is one thing, but guys risking, you know, their lives and paralysis for what? P.U.
Now, the Dudleys had split up on the brand extension. Bubba Ray had his solo run on Raw just as himself. And then there was Reverend Devon. Of course, those both flopped. So did you agree with them putting them back together as a team?
Well, sure. I never wanted to see them split. So,
no?
Yes.
You don't think they needed some time off?
No. Ugh. Have them leave. Give them time off.
I thought Bubba, I mean, we've seen it now. Obviously, lately, he's become a single star. I thought Bubba had it. They just didn't go about it the right way.
They kind of ignored him.
But, okay, so what made Bubba different of being in the Dudleys versus not? Well, he could juggle. Oh, he could play the piano, too. Those are the two things that I remember the most. At least with Devon, he was a different character. He was a different person. You know what I mean? Like, it talked about his, you know, his pastoral roots. And so it was just something. I just remember, you know, well, why do they got to stick that stiff Batista with him? He's awful and rotten and should be fired. Well, who'll collect the money? Yeah, I understand why they have him there, but why do they have him here? Why isn't he out on the street? Why is he collecting a paycheck?
He ended up making them a lot of money. It's a good thing they didn't cut him. Listen,
he's
to you.
A jerk.
You're a jerk. So,
you're a double jerk.
Mm.
Good grief.
It's gotten ugly.
Save this for next week.
Your thoughts on Victoria, Kevin? Her debut comes in, has a hardcore match with Trish at Survivor Series. What do you think of Trish's progression to this point? Or is this the best women's feud to date?
I loved it. I was a big fan of Victoria's, of course, because I knew her from the first days of, you know, when she began in the company.
And you were in the shower with her, right, in that one scene when she was the hoe?
No, I wasn't, but thank you for thinking of me. It was a, you know, here she was working her way up through Memphis and all the way through and now debuting on Raw. And I just remember, like, you know, watching with great pride, watching in the monitor saying, there's another one. Every time any of my, you know, the people that I got to work with, I can't say like my guy or my girl, like I had anything really to do with them, but when those that I had the opportunity to work with and hopefully helped get better or get ready in some way, shape, form or fashion, whenever I saw them progress to the main roster, it always made me feel good. Like at least I had some sort of contribution above just, you know, commentating on some matches and doing backstage interviews.
Now, after...
Then. Oh, I thought we were playing Password. I'm
now,
sorry.
And then. The Brock Lesnar run finally ends at Survivor Series. He loses to Big Show.
The swerve.
We got a few questions here, so we'll go one by one. First,
okay.
Why pick him to beat Brock Lesnar?
Okay.
Because JR and I have been trashing him on a monthly basis for being such a useless sloth through most of this 2-year stretch.
Who
while
else
all of a sudden
would
elevate
be,
him and make him champion?
Who else would be big enough to beat Brock Lesnar other than the largest athlete in the world? He had already beaten The Rock to win the title.
Because he hadn't done anything in like 2 years.
He had slaughtered The Undertaker. And now here he was getting ready to beat The Big Show again.
Yeah, but he was doing nothing.
But you got the turn and the shock and the betrayal with Heyman. It became more about Heyman than it was about Show.
Yeah, in 4 minutes, which is crazy.
Well, again, what do you want to see? 29 minutes?
No, just saying. It was crazy that Brock's first loss, essentially, came to Big Show in 4 minutes.
But because of Paul Heyman.
Did you think it made sense? Because, you know, on your show last week, we talked about Fuji turning on Demolition for the Powers of Pain. Didn't this seem like kind of the same? At least Heyman got the... At least he did it in the title match.
He walked out with the belt,
yeah,
right.
At least he did that.
Yes. So there you go. And then I just remember, like, Heyman talking about... after wrestling the Big Show, you know, on the road, all the matches on the road, and Show and Heyman both, you know, walking out and getting into the car like two old women, you know, oh, the back, oh, the knee, the leg, oh, because Brock was beating the holy hell out of both of them every night, you know, so.
What's my placer thing?
Was that supposed to be Hogan?
Yeah. I know we talked about most of that earlier, but
yeah, I don't know because the Heyman thing was a surprise to a lot of people internally in the company, like surprised that they pulled the belt off of Brock when they did. They and the internal thing was everybody liked the way they did it, but it was still a surprise. So. There you go. I don't remember the Hogan thing being part of the equation, though.
Was it the injury the reason?
Probably.
Ribs?
Back? Ribs? Everything.
Maybe they would have taken it off him if it wasn't?
Who? With Brock?
Yeah. Were they going to take it off him anyway for the run to Mania? Or is it only they did it because he was injured and they didn't know how long he'd be out?
Maybe a little bit of both, and that's kind of a cop-out answer.
It is.
Take it off of them to have him win it back, to challenge for it again. Yes, don't know how long he's going to be out. injuries, yes, was part of the reason why Hogan wasn't in that match, because his body was breaking down too. Could have been the reason. Could have been, you know, it could have been that he asked out and he didn't want to do it. You know, it's like, well, I got this one more match in me. Yeah, but we can't have you in this situation beating Brock. And so therefore, no, we're not going to do it. And instead, you know, Brock winds up hurt. And so maybe that was the decision. Okay, well, we'll swerve everybody and Heyman could be with Show and now he could chase and we can just do, you know, Zabada matches on the road with Heyman getting involved and he gets his ass kicked, but he doesn't quite beat Show for the belt and we'll protect everybody. So, yeah, there's your answer. How do you like that?
Much better than the one you're originally going to give us, so that's good.
No, I mean, that's why I kind of felt like it was a... Because, again, I didn't have direct pipeline knowledge of what it was. But knowing the particulars, knowing the facts as they were, and the personalities involved, that there was no... You know, it was not a Montreal situation. Let's not screw Brock out of the belt or whatever. This wasn't some kind of lesson that we were teaching him. It was cover. It was cover on a few levels. And making sure that Heyman was with Show was part of that cover.
Mm. I like that theory about it pretty much being Brock Heyman and Show was just kind of there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You almost forget that Show was the third man in the ring.
Yeah.
All right. And that same night, Scott Steiner made his debut. Where do you rank his pop? Because I was in the building that night, and it was out of control. Did you get the same feeling? Where would you put it kind of on your own personal list?
When I think about two moments with Scott Steiner. One, the pop when he debuted, and two, the match with Triple H.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. But to go from where you were that night, and you're exactly right, that pop was out of control. It was unbelievable. To then be where we were just 2 months later.
And not even make the Mania card.
No. Just unbelievable. Unconscionable.
It is pretty weird.
Listen to you.
I have theories about that, though.
You're an apologist. You are such an apologist.
Where would you rank it, Kev, with the Mick Foley coming out, Steve Austin coming out, Mick Foley winning the title in Worcester?
Hell, I'd put it up there. I'd put it in the close to Jericho, Raw's Jericho.
So what is Jericho rank versus the Mick title win for you? Because Mick winning the title, to me, was the loudest I've heard a crowd live. This was right behind it.
Jericho 1, Mick 2, Scott Steiner 3.
Having Jericho, been was there, that crazy, huh?
Oh, my God, yeah. Having been there for both, there was, yeah, just that. And again, it could be the difference between 4,000 or 5,000 extra people, you know, in Chicago versus in Providence.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was... It was just the just that when the graphic popped up and you realized it was Jericho and just that moment right there. Yeah, some great debuts. Taz's thing and the Garden was incredible. Steiner, oh my gosh, and oy vey, how they pissed that away.
It was awesome.
That and part of the reason why I get so mad is because here I was now, and this is November of 2002, and 6 months later I was out of a job. And part of the reason why I was out of a job is because they pissed money away. They pissed money away for the whole invasion angle. And they pissed away money in the XFL before that. And they pissed away money with Scott Steiner and just time after time after time, and I could only excuse so much. So it eventually affected me and my family. And then it's like, you know what? You guys suck.
You had mentioned this earlier, but expound on it more. The Matt Hardy V1 gimmick after he turned on his brother. It was pretty awesome.
It was great. Again, the only thing, you know, none of us really wanted to see Matt and Jeff feud. But to see
what Matt Hardy became out of it, he became a big star.
Well, the good thing here is they didn't feud. Matt turned on him and he went to SmackDown. So I think that was a key to it, too. They just kind of split and they never crossed paths like they did earlier that one time they tried it.
Exactly. And that's why it was good for me. It wasn't like, okay, somebody turns and now we have a rivalry against each other, because nobody wanted to see Matt versus Jeff. But what we got was Matt becoming, and like, what did we do differently with Bubba? With D-Von, we created a whole other character, which I think they could have done a lot more with, but they didn't. And so this is what you had. But with Matt Hardy, you created somebody brand new, somebody different, somebody that was interesting, that you, when the music hit and you were waiting for him to come down the ramp, and it was the perfect SmackDown gimmick because of the way the graphics were and being able to put those Matt facts in, just fit in with the look and the feel of the show. He was the poster child of SmackDown, mm-hmm. as far as guys that were built around a show that was custom made for them.
And a great song too, right off the bat.
Oh yeah, come on. Oh yeah, Monster Magnet.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I could slam a tornado.
The MFers, Shannon Moore.
Matt Shannon likes his hot chocolate at just the right temperature.
Remember, Taz really helped that gimmick too. Always making jokes about Shannon Moore drinking the banana juice and the nut butter and all that stuff. I mean, kind of wise jokes, but it was good. All right, Chamber thoughts. Kev, was Michaels the right choice to win the belt here? Was he still looked at as a part-timer, or do we know he'd be kind of coming back full-time? Was it a Lifetime Achievement Award kind of title win?
75% thought full-time. Still that 25% thought part-time. I did not like the Chamber. I didn't like the level of violence. I didn't like the level of... I thought that it was unsafe. Unsafe to work in. Way too stiff. You know, would you put your own son in something like that? No, of course not. I'd put my own son in a regular cage match. In fact, I do that on a weekly basis out in the backyard. But just the way that thing had no give, and those plastic plexiglass things, just like somebody's going to get really seriously hurt. Didn't we already lose Owen's life? And is this really worth it? And didn't Triple H almost die in this thing anyway?
Yes.
Yes.
His knee went into his throat.
Destroyed him.
Right. Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of many people.
Much to the chagrin of you.
No, much to the chagrin of many people that he didn't die.
Oh.
Well, how about Sean winning?
That's fine. Won?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
It was a good
not?
Moment. It was a cool moment.
Right. Never thought we'd see it again. Here we were.
Kind of like a vindication for Sean in that building too, because historically he used to get crucified in that place. 6 years exactly 6 years earlier, he gets cheered when Sid pastes him with a camera in the face, and they beat the snot, and he beats the snot out of Jose Lothario.
Yeah, that turned Sid babyface in one night.
Pretty bloodlust in that building, and 6 years later, confetti's falling from the ceiling.
Well, that's all you Yankees. That's all you Yankees up there. And I'll throw Connecticut and Rhode Island in the mix.
Very different. Now,
we
talked
to this one.
What?
I said, I think we know the answer to this one.
Yes. Batista, from the Deacon to just Batista. Good pairing with Ric Flair?
No, he's horrible.
So you didn't think he'd make it?
No, he should have been fired. He should have never been given the opportunity to get over.
You didn't like him? You didn't like Leviathan?
Loved Leviathan. Loved it. No. Loved it. And he was a great guy, too, until he turned on Danny and Jim and told everybody that he never learned anything in OVW. And I lost any amount of respect. I don't care what he could do. He could save an orphanage on fire, carry all the kids out. I don't care. He's a piece of crap because he stabbed people in the back that I care about for his own selfish gain and completely lied. The fact that he came down there and the only thing that Afa and the Samoans had taught him was in their wrestling school was how to write the check The guy couldn't lock up. He couldn't do anything. They taught him. They unlearned everything and then relearned everything from scratch. And this guy felt like he couldn't get over and couldn't learn any more than what he had. Okay, that's fine. I understand that. But to say that you learned nothing there is a bald-faced lie. Mm. So there is not a well deep enough that he could fall in for me to be happy.
Okay.
The Angle taking the title, setting the seeds for WrestleMania. Did you like that? Good move. He gets the title off of a Big Show, and they do the whole thing where it was all part of Heyman's plan, basically, because it looks a little weird at first having, they get Brock reinstated, then Brock chases off Heyman, and Angle wins the belt, and then it would be revealed that Angle and Heyman are working together. Did you like that whole thing, swapping Angle and Brock?
I did. How else is somebody Angle size going to beat the Big Show? So you got to be really careful with, you got to be careful with that. You got to figure out ways to do it. And they had done what they wanted to do, which was we wanted to get to Angle versus Brock. So now we could do it with Heyman still in the mix. And there you go. I liked it. I liked everything about it. As long as we didn't have stupid Angle, as long as we didn't have, make a fool of himself, Kurt Angle. I loved Kurt Angle. I thought everything was great.
The other big match at Armageddon was the Three Stages of Hell, of course, the rematch of Triple H and Shawn. Was that overbooked? They already had this match at SummerSlam, which was 5 stars. Do they have to really do it again in another structure? And since he only added a month, was Shawn's reign even... Should they even have bothered?
Again, Triple H was always one to say, we can't hotshot the belt unless it served him. Then it was perfectly fine to hotshot the belt. So, no, of course not. No, it wasn't right. But is that what they did? Yes. Because, again, it served Triple H's purpose. So, just a phony. Another phony. Your phony, Scott.
My phony. Phony fun.
Phony phone call.
So you're one of the ones who liked that RVD's knee went into his throat. I knew it. Sycophant.
Better than what Scott wishes when it is. All right. The final thoughts of 2002, Kev. Both the status of the company heading into 2003 and then your personal state of mind.
Well, I should have been better preparing. Maybe a yard sale. Maybe... get the resume out, try to get an agent. By the way, if anybody ever knows an agent, please send them my way. I've never had representation, and I would love to have an agent. I don't care if I had to pay 10%. That'd be fine to me.
I'll do it. 10%. Your big money.
Yeah,
deals.
But what do you know?
Yeah, whatever. We'll figure it out. I built this thing up, right?
Listen to this, Scott. See what he says? me.
Did you watch, I built this. Did you watch Frasier, Kev?
Yeah, of course.
He's not exactly B.B. Glazer.
No, he's not B.B. Glazer. He looks like B.B. Glazer, though. But he's not near the agent of one B.B. Glazer. Bubba the Bulldog. Now, again, that was a show. I don't know. I had a lot of bad feelings. Boy, I was the nattering nabob of negativity in the office. I had my little minions that I would just talk to and, kind of speak philosophically about, booking decisions and things like that. And there were a lot of good, smart people there, and I think they probably got tired of me just coming in and pounding my head against the desk because I hated it. I hated working there. I hated everything about it. So miserable, hated a lot of the direction of where they were going, saw the handwriting on the wall with Triple H, knew that everything was, going to get much worse before it got better. And my God, I was right. Happy New Year.
Would you have stayed? How long would you have held on? Would you have ever walked away, you think?
How much time do we have?
5 minutes.
All right. I'll tell you the story in 5 minutes.
Okay.
If I was smart, I would have walked away a lot sooner. But I was not and this is sort of a story for everybody in their lives. You've got to have an exit strategy. I had gotten myself in over my head financially and couldn't see my way out. And I had nowhere to go. I had nowhere to turn. I think that was part of the reason why I hated everything so much, is because I was screwed financially because I couldn't walk away. I felt completely trapped and paralyzed and knew that my time was coming because I could see all the handwriting on the wall. I knew financially where things were going to go, and I knew sooner or later my number was going to get called, and I was trapped and paralyzed and no escape and felt claustrophobic and hated everybody and everything. So, there you go.
Nobody would ever have quit.
TNA? Is that what you're saying?
What now?
You would never have quit. That's what you're saying.
No, I couldn't quit. Where would I have gone?
No feelers from TNA?
I called TNA the day I got fired. And Jeff said, we got no money. So
well, that's true.
Yeah.
Still and now true.
Yeah. 12 years
here
later.
Here we are 11 years later and the answer is the same.
Well, right. That's funny, because I wanted to ask you about that quick, and I'm sure we'll cover it next Wednesday. Just a really quick take on the TNA thing.
I've known about this for a while. There's been rumor within the industry that this was what was going to happen. Dixie trying to shop this show elsewhere, because they knew it's going to happen, too. And having other people buy it. Billy Corgan was the, remember they were talking about selling the company to somebody big?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it was Billy Corgan. And the reason why that deal fell through is because Dixie wanted, the condition of the sale was, is that she would be given a no-cut talent contract guaranteed for 3 to 5 years, whatever the amount was, so whatever the amount of time was, to be talent on the show. Hmm. And they were like, no. So, this has been in the works for a while. I don't know whether this is the end of TNA if they're not on Spike, and I don't see them being on Spike. The other thing I see is possibly Spike buying it and rebranding the whole thing, changing the name, changing everything. But I don't know if they want to make that investment like they did with Bellator. Then the flip side is, okay, so if not there, then when? They have a significant presence in Europe. And I think that they might be sustainable over there, but it would require a huge change. And they would probably, they might try to find a buyer over there and just sell it and take it over there and do it over there and take over the existing television contracts or license it out to somebody over there, which is a possibility. There's a few things. I'm sure they're working on all those things. But yeah, don't be shocked if somebody else, another wrestling company, finds a spot on Spike on Thursday night. Just saying. How about that Max Scherzer, huh?
What did he continues do now?
He continues to win.
Yeah. One thing that may not continue to win, I want to get your prediction, and again, something we'll talk about Wednesday night. What will the subscriber number be for the WWE Network tomorrow for the announcement?
Within how much? 50, what do you want me to do?
All right, over. Well, yeah, is it going to go up? Let's start there. Up or
down? It's going to go down.
You think it's going to go down?
I think it's going to be between 550 and 600.
If it's that low, there's going to be a lot of bloodletting. I mean, that. I don't know if it can even drop that much because we're still within that first 6 months, aren't we?
Yeah, it doesn't end until I think the night after. I think they have it.
Oh, okay. Then
it's somewhere between SummerSlam and Night of Champions is when the 6 months are up.
Oh, well, then how about 642? Down just a little bit.
Okay. Interesting.
What do you think? You think it's 8?
I think it'll be about 850.
Really?
Ooh, that's high. I'm going to say very high sevens, and they spin it that it's almost 8.
850.
There's rumors that they're going to include all the people they got to sign up for the free, like the no commitment thing on the arenas.
Oh, okay. So the number is bullshit then. Okay. That's
fine. Yeah, bullshit.
Then why don't they just say 3 million and be done with it?
Because that's not believable. I mean, they still got people looking at books. I'm just saying they're going to include the people that they got to sign up for the no commitment, no credit card needed trial thing.
So that's a minute. So if I'm Vince, I spend, what, $2 million of my own money
and I sign up, how many people would that be? 20 million people at $10 a year, or how many people would that be? 200,000?
I don't think they could legally get away with that as a publicly traded company. But.
You get away with anything you want. You're Vince McMahon.
Cooking the books.
He beat the federal government. He beat Ted Turner.
I'll beat you.
All right. We're out of here. So, Scott, we are back, what, Monday with Royal Rumble 2003? Head into the new year, finally.
Yes.
Next Wednesday, we'll be back, me and this boy here, Kevin Kelly. We'll be talking what to up? Dale Arnold. We'll break down the network subscriber announcement. We'll break down whatever's going on with Impact and yep. any other hot stories. We'll talk about Ring of Honor moving a split now. We'll cover everything else. We'll cover everything else. We'll talk about Core Bauer, sabotage, all the big stories.
Core Bauer? What has he done?
All the other bullshit stories that are out there. And then, Scott, you'll be on the main event. Do we know who's on yet?
We're going to keep Core 4 this week. I want to get everybody's regulars in to talk about this, the TNA and the network stuff. So we will have the full Core 4 for this week's show. And we'll talk about the network. We'll talk about TNA. We'll talk about the Core Bauer show.
No. Justin Albert.
Ring of Honor on Universal. And no. So, yeah, we'll talk about a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff that's coming out in the next few days.
All right, then we be out. So for Kevin and Scott, this is Justin. We'll talk to you all Monday nights from Royal Rumble 2003. Well, some of us will. The rest will talk to you Wednesday. Goodbye. So what did you spend all this money on, Kevin, that you were sewing over your head?
Oh, just living.
The finest hookers in Connecticut.
I bought a condo.
There ain't many of those.
I bought a condo and had a $1,600 a month mortgage payment and a $200 a month maintenance charge, you know, from the community. So $1,800 a month. And
you just moved in with Scott.
Didn't know Scott at the time.
Probably a good thing.
Had a wife and a youngin'. I'm at the bases in. I'm kind of stingy, that's why I don't want to win. A funky rhyme to a foe or a good friend. Now listen up, cause I want you to comprehend. Cause I'm the leader, the man, superior. I take care of you and then you get worrier. So just sit, my rhymes are not counterfeit. The record sells, which makes this one a hit. It won't hurt to listen to Red Alert. Take off the shirt, make sure I don't hit the dirt. I like the kids, the guys, the girls. I want the junkies, this is Raw Bass World. I'm on a mission, you better just listen to my rhymes, cause I'm all about this and cause you get weary, don't cheer me, just hear me out, cause I got the clout, shout, before I turn the party out, I won't stutter, project my voice, speak clearly, so you can be my choice on stage, or on record, go to the Wiz and select it, take it off the rack, give it back, put it back, I like the Whopper, the Big Mac, if you want static, so let's go, so, throw up your hands, go for what you know, bro, I got an ego, yo, talking to me, no, oh, cause my you ready now?